Good evening, Perry.
I own a motel. Not too far from here. And you'd be welcome to spend the night in one of the empty rooms if you'd like.
Oh, it burns! Oh, it burns! And I'm the devil.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Necronomicast. This is Wayne.
Zip.
Brian.
It's Doug. Hi.
Hey, and today we're talking about 80s horror movies.
Yes. Totally radical.
Right.
Sweet. Gnarly. Trippendicular.
Tubular.
Gag me with a spoon.
And actually, they did in a couple of them, I think. So, yes. And so, my theory was for this night is to talk about not only just 80s horror movies, but the 80s horror movies. I mean, when I was young in the 80s, mm-hmm. in high school, when I was some of the 80s movies were the ones that changed my fear of horror into mm-hmm. my love of horror. So that's kind of what I want to talk about tonight. We're some of the, and some of us just recently went back and watched some 80s movies that we haven't seen for years.
Mm-hmm. I watched one I have never seen.
And never seen that we were talking about, yeah. So if you listen to last episode, man, Zip, you were talking about The Reanimator that you'd never seen.
Yep, never saw. I have now.
All right. So, well, let's start there, Zip.
Are you a changed man?
What do you think?
It was interesting. It's an H.P. Lovecraft story, mm-hmm. and I had read a lot of, when I was in high school, I read a lot of H.P. Lovecraft. I can thank Metallica for that. Mm-hmm. I had heard about it before, and I think I thought it was going to be more similar to a Frankenstein story.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't really know anything about it. And I guess I don't know if I'd heard it somewhere or thought it was going to be more of like a Frankenstein type thing, reanimating dead bodies. But it was definitely more of like a zombie movie, but different than the typical zombie of infecting each other. Infecting humans with it. Instead, it was injections into the brain of glowing green goo. I really liked the actor. I can't think of his name that played
the doctor,
the medical student that was at the beginning of the movie with the doctor
Jeffrey Combs.
And I looked him up, and he's like been a voice actor ever since.
Yeah,
is that right?
Well, yeah. And he was also in From Beyond, which is another one of my favorite ones because I was a fan of Reanimator. From Beyond is also bizarre and weird, but he has this weird look to him, and he's not a likable character in Reanimator. No. And it looks like the movie and the cover and everything makes you think that you're going to like this guy, but
he
really...
Yeah, no, he's really unlikable.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. He reminds me of... It seems like he'd play a good politician. Like a sleazy politician or like a sleazy car salesman kind of guy.
Right.
But he's definitely... it was a good movie. I enjoyed it. One of my favorite things about it, and this is kind of weird that it stuck out, was the opening credits. Was a black background, and it is like Grey's Anatomy in like really bright neon colors mm-hmm. with this black background, and that stuck out. Like I had to go back and watch that again because I thought I thought that was really.
I almost texted you today because Zip and I are in a band together, and we released an album. You know, we'll talk about it some other time. But there are shots. There's a shot from our artwork that is from Reanimator.
Yeah, really.
It's from Grey's Anatomy, the
book,
not the stupid TV show, but the book that my wife had to read to go through medical school. You know, like cross sections of humans and stuff. You know, it's like old school academic gore. So. Yeah, but the credits are great.
The credits were cool, and I also really enjoyed the creepy doctor.
You
really have to suspend your disbelief in the movie because, like the headless doctor carrying his own head. Like, how does he know where to go? He's like,
and talk. How does he talk?
Right. How does he get air oxygen to talk? Mm-hmm. But I did love the naked girl strapped to the table, and he's like holding the head close to it so he can stick his tongue in her ear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
See, it's a beautiful scene.
Oh, again, it's a beautiful, disgusting.
When you're young and you're watching that, you're just like, some of those scenes are hot because all the 80s movies had boobs and sex in it.
Yeah.
And
in a really disgusting, demented way.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You're like, Oh my gosh. And you know, all the college students are having sex and everywhere, and yeah, it was just crazy. And that one actually was funny too,
because like, it's campy.
Yeah. The cat scene when they're trying to get the cat in the basement.
Oh yeah.
That's right.
And it's just jumping everywhere, just freaking out.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. So it's funny, it's good. Another movie that I watched recently from the 80s is American Werewolf in London, which I had watched in the 80s, and going back and watching it recently, I really didn't like it. I thought it was pretty boring.
Really?
The transformation scene is still pretty amazing.
All right.
But overall, I thought it was kind of boring. But the funny parts are still funny. Because Werewolf in London was more of like a comedy, kind of a comedy horror. And so all the parts with his buddy,
Jack comes back to haunt
who like is a zombie, is like decomposed in different levels, you know, stages of decomposition throughout the movie. That was enjoyable, but overall it's kind of bored. So I really kind of like, having not seen Reanimator before, I really enjoyed it.
Really?
And
that one to me was one of my top ones that changed my view of horror, because A, it was funny. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't terrified the entire
Reanimator.
Yeah. And also that it was just the whole effects thing where you're like, oh, how I know how they did the head when he's talking. I know how they were holding it. I know what they did here. And, you know, he was just gory. So that was one of those ones that when it came out, it was also in Fangoria, and I was getting Fangoria magazine at the time. So,
oh, did you get that as a subscription? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, we used to just go to the mall and like creep and like,
yeah, me too. All the books.
It was so funny because the centerfold would be like a guy, like a mangled corpse.
Right.
Like you're opening it up like it's a Playboy, and you're like,
people are looking at you like, what the hell are you doing? Like, oh, this is horrifying.
Yeah, I used to look at those at Baker's.
Yeah. Baker's.
At Baker's Square. My mom would be shopping, and I'd just be camped out in front of the magazine section looking at Fangoria or Vampirella.
Yeah.
Ooh. There was also a movie, Monsters, and then there was another Starlog.
Starlog.
I read a lot of
more sci-fi.
Yeah.
But, Fangor always had the gnarliest covers, and then you just flip through a little bit, and you're going to see these movies. Like, I'll never go see this. It's on video. I don't know if I can rent it because I'm not old enough yet. But it's just disgusting. You're like, oh, my God.
Fangoria was cool because that's how you got a lot of movie news, too. Because, I remember, springtime, they'd be plugging the new Friday the 13th, or they'd be plugging the new Nightmare on Elm Street, or something like that. So you'd pick up in the 80s Fangoria, and you're like, oh my God, this movie's coming out in a couple weeks or a couple months. And look, here's behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Here's shots from the set.
You know? If you didn't go to a lot of those movies, you wouldn't see any of the trailers. It's not like you can go on the internet back then and look at the trailers. Mm-hmm. The only way we got any news about what's happening and what we have to go rent or see was from those magazines.
You had to scavenge for news in the 80s. You had to get it.
Yeah, yeah.
How do we survive?
Search. I don't know.
Hunters and gatherers. You got to gather your...
This is before we got on and started recording. All four of us were on our phones looking at different stuff. You know, it's like, how did people function back then?
Oh, I have no idea. So, Brian, what are you going to bring up?
All right, I watched two movies this week, or since the last recording session. I watched Fright Night from 1985. Mm-hmm. I hadn't watched it since. Oh, totally a classic. And it was funny. I was watching it, or when I thought I was going to watch it, I was kind of thinking back when they remade it in 2011, and they made a sequel to it and to the remake. And I'm like, well, why are they remaking Fright Night? I mean, I saw it when I was younger, but it didn't stick with me. So I watched it now, and it really holds up kind of pretty well. I mean, it's total 80s soundtrack. It sounds like it sounds like an episode of Miami Vice.
Yeah. Soundtracks. That's what gets me going back and watching these albums. Soundtracks are just synth scores.
Yeah, it's kind of syncopated drums.
You know, it's just like In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins.
The dance scene and everything they're wearing at the clubs are always crazy, weird clubs.
The vampire, and his name's Jerry Dandridge is the vampire's name. It's not like...
Something.
It's Jerry Dandridge running for city council, or you know, like, the, you know, I'm Jerry Dandridge. So you got Jerry Dandridge. He's the vampire, and he's wearing like these nice pleated pants, and he wears
sweaters.
Like, this, but he looks like when he's in that club scene that you're talking about, Wayne. It's like he's he's chasing after Charlie and his girlfriend Amy, who later became Marcy on Married with Children.
Yeah.
Oh right. Yeah.
Badoom badoom. So he's chasing after him after the club, and he's kind of going around, and he kind of looks like a total date rapist guy, like looking for somebody to put roofies in their drink, you know. He's wearing like the overcoat that's gray, kind of leathery, so that's kind of supposed to be his, you know, like kind of think of bat wings. And movie's great though. It holds up pretty well despite the soundtrack. It's got Roddy McDowell, who's really good in it.
Oh yeah.
I really enjoyed it. It was a blast from the past because it was just really funny. It was there were some shock scares, but it's not a real scary movie.
Well, the biggest shock scare was actually on the cover. So the biggest shock scare that I think that from watching that, that I went watching the new one, what are they going to do? And it's still people try and replicate that through is the girl when she's remember she turns around and she's. Maid and her big giant vampire mouth and the big smile, right. And the big overly giant, scary, fang filled mouth.
I don't remember that for some reason.
That's the biggest one.
Yeah, yeah. She turns around. She's got the, it's like this, it's total like Heath Ledger, huge.
I mean, really?
It's
just huge. Yeah. Which girl huge are we talking about? The one that became Marcy? Friend.
Amy. Yeah, yeah, Marcy. Yeah. Who later married Steve and moved next to the Bundys. Yeah.
They did that kind of in the remake. They did that in the remake. A little bit. Yeah, they, a little bit they had that whole.
There's a couple
must
good.
Be so shocking. I've blacked it out.
There's a lot of jump scares in it. Like, you know, like there's this one guy. It's so funny. It's kind of like any 80s movie, buddy movie, where you've got the weird guy. So this guy's name is Evil Ed. And he's
yeah,
and he's played by Steve Jeffries, and who went on to be the chronic masturbator in Heaven Help Us. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
Oh, it's great. Oh, yeah. Heaven Help, if we ever do a comedy show, we'll do that one.
I've seen him in 976 Evil.
Yeah.
Oh, he's okay. Good very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
So he's in this, and he gets scared by Jerry Dandridge in the alleyway. I mean, there's a lot of good jump scares, but...
And he was later... We actually didn't get an interview with him, but he came to Omaha as he came to Omaha
for the blood drive maybe or something.
Yeah. And was part of that and he came here for, and he was on the Dr. Sangamary show cause we're sponsored by him. And so Tim actually was able to, and I was out of town, but Tim actually came on and, brought him around Omaha and he said he had the best time ever in one of his appearances because apparently, they didn't treat him very good in other appearances or things that he did, whether it's at conventions or whatnot.
Nebraska nice. Yeah. That's us.
Exactly. we showed him a good time here, and he was very happy with that.
So Fright Night holds up pretty well. It has, like, the funny characters, like, you know, Charlie, the main guy, he's real uptight because he lives next door to the vampire. And, of course, he's trying to tell the cops, and nobody believes him, you know, so he has to go about it on his own, and then he gets Roddy McDowell, who is great, who died, I think, not too many years after the filming. So it's, I don't know if it's one of his last ones, but it's always good to see him.
He was Herman's Head, Fox, a little-known Fox show called Herman's Head. And he was also, I believe, the lead in Mannequin 2, which I had not seen, but I recognize that actor.
Well, if it's half as good as Mannequin, the original...
And the lead actor. Oh, when did Princess Bride come out? That was,
Right. So Fright Night, it's on Netflix. I caught it. I watched it. It's actually one of those horror movies that my wife would watch with me. Mm-hmm. So, it worked its way out. It was great. The other movie I saw, I just finished it today, was Chud.
Yes.
Oh,
and that's an iconic horror movie, and I think
it's
a lot of
cult.
People. I don't know so if yeah, cult. I don't know if a lot of people remember everything that went on in that.
And it's like John Goodman's first movie, and he plays this sleazy cop for like 30 seconds before he's killed. So, excuse me, the 40s talking to me.
Singing.
So Chud stands for cannibalistic humanoid underground dweller, and basically, real quick, what it is these homeless people living underneath the sewers in New York. They are infected, poisoned by toxic nuclear waste. Now, this is the 80s. That's some kind of slimy, politician-y kind of guy from the government made some backroom deals to store all this nuclear, like storing nuclear waste. Oh. It's totally that 80s kind of vibe.
It's like Men at Work,
Can't trust the government. They're putting the nuclear waste under the subways, you know, in abandoned tunnels and everything. So the homeless people get infected. They become...
Chuds.
Really, they become chuds. And of course, then they go eat people. And it was. Do I like the movie? Yeah, it was really good. It was fun to watch, but it's really kind of poorly made. He wants you to get a bottle or something.
Yeah, we could get that.
We could talk. I think Wayne wants a bottle from the bar.
Right. Right. So, but if I could talk just for a second about how weird this movie was. There was so, like, the main character and his girlfriend, who is pregnant, I guess his wife, they didn't need to be in the movie at all. If you,
really?
If, I don't think so, because you got the cop whose wife is missing, and then you've got, the cop, his wife's missing, and then you got the shady government people, then you've got the advocate for the homeless who's looking for all of his homeless friends that have now become chuds, and then you've got John Hurd, who's the fashion photographer, and his girlfriend, who kind of stumble on this because he is tired of taking fashion photos, and he takes pictures of the homeless people. So I don't know if he needed to be in it at all. I mean, yeah, right. Well, it sounds
ridiculous.
So then, I mean, the movie was made for $1 million and it made 20.
So
I mean,
so, what made it an iconic 80s movie, though? What do you think made
sell
it?
Sell me on this. Come on.
Yeah, like,
well,
one of the top.
You know what? It's the whole thing. I think name. I think if you go back to the 80s, you got to kind of absorb the political nature of the times. Yeah. It was nuclear
everything.
Three Mile Island.
It was the poison. You had Chernobyl. You had all this stuff going on. Plus, it had some goofy special effects. You had people getting transformed. You had that zombie element. You know,
they should have made like their own kind of candy to sell.
Did they look good?
Called chuds.
The chuds, I don't think look good at all, because they had like flashlights for eyes. Now, I'm not making fun of the film, because I know we have listeners and they're probably going to email and say, "What? That's a classic film, and you're denigrating." No, I'm not denigrating.
Yeah, so is Toxic Avenger. I mean,
right? But. It is a classic movie, and it's important to the genre, but at the same time, you gotta admit, it's not made. I mean, it's a pretty sloppy movie, but it's enjoyable. And it's free on Netflix as well.
And the thing is, when you say chuds, we're going back to, we could do a whole show on the cover art for 80s VHS films.
Yes, yes, yes.
Horror films. Mm. And that is one, when you talk about chuds, that you immediately see that, because you always walk by it. You know, at Blockbuster, even the 90s, you walked by it and you still saw it.
And real quick, before I finish, you go to Wikipedia and you look up Chud, which, you know, I was doing some research for the show, because I do show prep.
Yes,
everybody, you got to bring the lumber.
He has a piece of paper written. Mm-hmm. With, he brought it with him.
These are my show notes. So, but you go to Wikipedia and you look, and there's like cultural references to Chud. And everything from The Simpsons to all these other shows, they all, all these writers and everything saw it as a kid, which we're kind of talking about the 80s being influential. They were influenced by it, and so it kind of worms its way into, you know, everything from The Simpsons to everything else. It's just really funny that seeing everything that Chud has been on.
I'm going to have to catch up with this Chud.
Doug!
I watched.
You had a busy couple of weeks.
I watched all three of the Poltergeist films.
Very nice.
Yeah, well, one of them was.
Yeah.
upon revisiting, the first one's great, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, have you guys all seen all three of them?
Yeah.
Or the one you haven't
seen? I've seen the second one. I don't know if I've
seen
one the
third. And two. I never saw three.
Yeah, two, I may as well just talk mostly here about two and three. They both kind of suck. I thought the second one would be a lot better than it was, actually. It's weird, like, this preacher, the Cain guy, you know?
Yeah.
I thought that, as a kid, that guy scared the hell out of me.
Right.
Yeah.
You're gonna die!
His holy temple.
You're gonna die.
You guys all look like that burnt fireman guy from In Living Color.
That's what he looked like. He scared the shit out of you.
Yeah, fire team people. But he wasn't scary as an adult, really.
Really?
At all. He was way more effective to a kid. The only scenes that I thought stood up still were the braces scene was pretty badass, where his braces come out and just wrap them in this big cocoon.
Yeah.
That was still really cool. And then the scene where he's puking up the creature that's kind of part him, the worm.
The
thing.
Tequila worm?
Yeah, tequila worm. Yeah. That looked great. I mean, that would look great today.
Craig T. Nelson gets all shit-faced on tequila. Mm-hmm.
He kind of gets possessed by Kane, because he starts singing that song like that. Those two parts are good. The ending was really super cheesy. The acting was actually really bad. Even
was Joan Beth Williams in it?
She was in it. But, you know, the only reason that I like that one better than the third one is that it had that family. And I like that family, you know, those characters. The third one only has the little girl, really. And she's living with Tom Skerritt and her uncle or something like that. And the thing with the second two is that they just kind of... they don't move at a pace. Like, the first one is so great, how every these little things are happening, you know, things moving on their own. And that great scene in the kitchen where she's figured out, you know, that you can move something along the floor. She's got all taped out and stuff. That's, like one of the greatest scenes. And
It's cool about that scene.
It's so cool. It's not scary. Well, it is scary.
Well, you got Craig Nelson. He's like, as the dad, like nobody go in the kitchen after this. Like, he doesn't know what's going on. So you kind of feel his fear in it, too.
Yeah, that's a really good scene. There's nothing like that. Once they finish the first movie, you know, the second movie, almost immediately, like the first scene, skeletons start coming out of the ground and grabbing her, you know, the mom, and start pulling her down, which is actually so ridiculous at that point. They actually, it's a dream sequence. But it's not supposed to be. You're going that far already, you know, so...
It doesn't build any tension.
No. Scared, yeah. In fact, once they introduce the cane guy, in the third one, you just keep seeing this cane guy in a bunch of... There's a lot of glass and mirrors in this building. You just keep seeing him as if just seeing him is scary now, you know? And which...
Because there's nothing about that in the first movie.
Yeah, no. That's all
the whole
stuff.
Cult and everything.
No, that they kind of made
and
that
then
up
the
to keep them going.
Movie was the wasn't that the tower where they had...
Yeah, they're in, I think it's the John Hancock building, actually, in Chicago. Yeah, and I kind of checked out, you know, through that one pretty much.
And then the girl actually died soon after or during that movie.
I think she did. She was on some kind of medicine, and that's why her cheeks are puffy like that at the time. I'm not sure how. I did not do my prepping quite like this man over here, so I couldn't tell you all the fact. Do you have a running list of chud as it happens?
Yeah. Oh, we should have.
You know,
I don't.
Next
I
time, come with that, and then I'll respect. But here,
I got the gauntlet down.
I got to do some stuff.
Yeah, you were talking about the curse, though, of Poltergeist.
Well, you probably know better than me, but I know about it.
Well, shortly after the first movie, Rab Dominique Dunn, who is the daughter of writer Dominic Dunn, I know shit. I read. But she was strangled by her boyfriend. Yeah. And, like, you know, it was pretty ghastly. Like, 5 or 6 minutes, he just held her down. And then she was in a coma, and then she died. And so, and then somebody else on the worked behind the scenes on the movie died. And then Heather O'Rourke, the little girl, she died during the filming, like you said, Wayne, during the third movie. So there's the so-called...
Yeah, there's kind of like a curse or something.
Yeah.
That'd be a good show, because also The Exorcist has lots of bad curses.
Oh, my God.
A couple things that I noted while watching Poltergeist, the first one. First thing, this has nothing to do really with the movie, but it was the wife in that is hot.
Oh, Joey Williams.
Right? Okay.
Smoking.
But here's the thing. Any other time that I've seen that movie, she was just the mom. But now... I'm old.
Yeah, you're older.
And she's actually 10 years younger than me.
Really?
Because I looked up, you know, how old she was. She plays a 30-year-old. I think she was like actress with 31. So I'm looking at a 31-year-old. I'm going, you're hot. But it was shocking to me, going, wait a minute, this is the mom. I never
and
thought she was
the
hot.
How's the scene when they're smoking pot in bed?
Oh, yeah. Oh. It's pretty sweet.
Right.
Oh, there was one scene in that movie that's kind of, that even as a kid I remember being taken out of it, is, you know, when she's getting sucked up on the wall. And she's got her long shirt, or and it's coming up, and you can see her panties and stuff. You can see her pulling it down. So it's obviously the actress is trying to not show too much of the panty there.
Well, there's that, and I always thought like the ghosts were kind of pervy, and they're kind of like trying to sneak a peek.
So that's something that's getting pushed up by the ghosts. See,
supernatural forces.
That's what it is. So she's fighting back on the ghosts.
Yeah. Right.
They didn't want too rapey with it, but they kind of went to see your panties.
And one other thing that I thought was really cool is that you always remember the clown and Robbie and that clown, at the last scene where, you know, it pulls him under the bed and stuff.
Yeah.
But what I had forgotten is that then it cuts to the closet opening up again and trying to get the little girl. But then it cuts back and Robbie is just handing it to this clown.
Oh,
like he slams that fucker up there on the bed. And he's like, I hate you! I hate you! And he's ripping his arms off and stuff. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I had forgotten that usually you don't see someone kicking ass like that.
True.
You know? Usually you
as
just
a kid,
get killed.
Too,
So a kid just gives that clown
the
finally.
The cool thing about Poltergeist. It also has, and you know, it's the 80s, so again, there's that kind of political feel. You know, there's the whole thing about suburbia. It's the whole thing about, you know, the suburbs.
Urban sprawl.
So it's like, these guys were so
greedy.
You know, greedy that they didn't move that, the bodies.
No, but that
they
actually
didn't move the stones.
Headstones.
No, no, that actually happened. No, that was actually based on a true occurrence.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, where they? No. Yeah, where it actually they kind of.
The guy ripped his face off for real.
Yeah, when the rain came, it kind of washed out some of the things, and bodies were out in the neighborhood. So, yeah,
in the swimming, digging in the swimming pool.
It was inspired by an actual event. It wasn't like the whole thing was, but it was inspired.
Just like every other horror movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. Inspired by true events.
And you remember Robbie was on the show.
Yeah, yeah, he has a good interview.
Was it really?
Yeah, he was on.
Talked about, he's got some, like, he had a horror.
He has
horror
a clothing company.
Yeah, yeah.
Haunted Clothes or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he has a good interview.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Go back and check that out because he does talk a lot about Poltergeist.
Is he the one who FedEx shows up in the middle of the interview and he actually talks to the FedEx guy? Yeah, the door? I think it was him. Yeah, he's like, just 1 minute. Someone's at my door and he actually gets the
And that's available
delivery.
On the website.
Well, were you interviewing?
No, I just listened to it. Okay. No. I only have my one interview.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah.
Adrian.
Hello, everybody. This is Diamond Reckless from the Omaha Junior Roller Derby. Here in Omaha, we have an amazing women's roller derby team. But fun fact, we also have a men's one, too. They're called the Big O Roller Bros, and they are actively recruiting new skaters now. If you have any interest in joining a fun, athletic, and competitive team of derby dudes, contact BigORollerBros.org or BORB.recruiter@gmail.com. No experience required. See you on the track.
Beautiful.
What about you, Wayne?
I'm going to bring to the table The Howling because I love all sorts of different ones, but the one that actually affected me the most, I thought, was The Howling because at the age I was, it was I always wanted to be a werewolf. I thought werewolves were cool. I loved it. But this movie made me terrified of werewolves for a number of reasons. And also was extremely the change in it was amazing. The werewolves that they had in there, not the full size werewolves, scared the shit out of me. But the sex scenes in there, I mean, oh my god, that girl, one
scared the shit
hot
too.
Werewolf girl was so hot. Yeah, oh my god, oh, and the sex scene in that. And I just remember as a teen being like really turned on. And then I read the book. I read the book, and the book is way more graphic. And it was like a porno in that part of the book. And I kept reading that over and over. Man, oh wow, that lasted for a while. Just,
that was a great summer.
Yeah. I'm going to reread the chapter again.
Oh, it was great.
Yep. Keep it under the mattress.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Pull out your copy of Howling.
I just remember that being the sexiest, hottest movie, and I was so turned on as a kid by it. Like, oh, my God. Because they were turning into werewolves as they were doing it by the campfire, and you're like, oh, my God.
Awesome.
And but overall, I thought it was a great story. It was a... just a weird, eerie thing when he pulls the bullet out of his head, when he starts to change and go nuts, and then the towering werewolf. Now, it was the first time I ever saw a werewolf that was kind of full-sized, upright humanoid, and had the long ears and the snout, and the way they pushed the snout out, and I was talking about the controversy between the special effects guys with The Howling and American Werewolf, but that was the same kind of sequence they were going to use. That whole sequence was crazy to me, and it just was so frightening that it made in close quarters too, in a room. It wasn't like you were out in the woods like most werewolf movies were. When this guy changed, he changed in a room in front of somebody, and they watched the whole thing. So you have a witness to the changing, and then you realize that everybody's changing, and then they're trying to escape, and you can see them still changing and going crazy, and you're like, oh my god, they're changing automatically. It's not a full moon change. This is I can change whenever I want.
Like Team Wolf.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I really like that, but I just thought it was not super gory, but it was when it had to be gory, it kind of was. It was. I mean, pulling the bullet out of his head was just crazy.
Yeah. The Howling's really well done too. I mean, that stands up. Not like Chud or I mean. Hey, we love Chud.
Oh.
But Howling is it's really.
The only thing I didn't like about it was at the end, Dee Wallace's werewolf makeup when she was on the news. Yeah, it was kind of puppy looking. It was not awesome. It could have been way more gruesome, but they made her look good. And the second one was awful too because they picked up where that left off and it was terrible.
Oh, I never saw that.
I won't even go into the sequels to The Howling because they were terrible. But the original was. watching this guy kind of change. You know, and again, he was changing personally, and his relationship with D. Wallace was changing. So, and so, yeah, when we interviewed D. Wallace, he's still one of my, like, oh my God. I'm so, and it's not like she wasn't the one that was having sex, you know, or any of the hot parts. She was the, you know, the wife that was trying to escape from all this. But wow. Holy man. Yeah.
The hell? You guys remember Cat People with Ness?
Yeah.
I felt the same way about Cat People when I was...
Really?
I haven't watched it in a long time. I should probably revisit it sometime. Well, late at night alone?
Or, yeah.
Kidding.
Well, that was the thing, too. After... When I got older and horror movies came out, I kept saying... I even told my wife, I was like, man, they don't have any... They have some gore, but nobody has any just blatant tits or sex. Or, come on, I just want to... Yeah, woo, rip your shirt off, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just barely.
You
got to
see
that.
Piranha.
Yeah, I did. Oh, yeah, Piranha 3D.
Yeah, yeah.
They're starting to bring that back a bit. Yeah. I think they did with, like, Cabin in the Woods a little bit. Yeah. You know, right. And they kind of made fun of that too. That mm-hmm. Yeah, not anymore. You don't get the, you know, Friday 13th or whatever. There's like an element of sex and just naughtiness to everything, and then everybody dies.
I think there has to be. There's like a puritanical element to that where it's like these people are. Deserve to be killed because they're sinning.
Well, yeah, but I want to see. I think the boobs, there's like man.
A right, but that's and it kind of fits in with you just said Cabin in the Woods because that was the whole thing in that is that they're sacrifice. These people are sacrifices to these elder gods,
right?
And so and it makes sense. You know, there's
and Sigourney Weaver comes in at the end. Spoiler.
Yeah.
So and unicorns.
You're right. Though,
never
about
look
that
at them the same way.
Aspect, yeah.
Though
I mean,
because the virgin, the one that is the girl that survives at the end.
No, thank you. No pot. No, thank you.
But it lives. It is
kind of girl.
It's coming back around as we saw in well, we were talking about VHS and whatnot. Yeah. The succubus that mm-hmm. you know we see that a little bit. I mean, we see a little bit of that. But I really just like the blatant teenage college, and I don't know if it's just society or like. Maybe girls don't do that anymore, and they just don't want to go to the camps with the dudes and go fuck. I don't know.
The formula works, man. In the movies, the formula works.
Come on. So we rarely get to see that in a film anymore. But back then, you can if you want to see some great boobs and just for no reason, tits and ass and then killing immediately afterwards. That's you go see 80s horror.
Oh
movies.
Yeah, get them matched and dispatched.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
It. Man.
Yeah. Exactly. There's always the one horny couple that, and then the one guy that's a nerd that doesn't get to do anything, and he's you know, and then the one kind of odd
the dead
chick
fuck.
Or whatever.
Yeah, you're yeah,
he's always
totally,
a dead
man.
Fuck.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, all right. Well, now we've got our list. So I asked everybody to write a list of five.
You asked us this afternoon.
Yeah,
and you clarified it about 15
Doug
minutes
said,
ago. Okay. So my list sucks.
So it's just a list of maybe five movies that kind of changed your aspect or so this will be fairly quick, but just five movies in the 80s that made you turn from afraid of horror movies to a fan of horror movies that made a long-lasting impression on you. So when you talk horror, like, well, this is my favorite because of this, because it was just back then when I was terrified and when I watched this movie, I was terrified. So, and again, I'll go first. And it was Reanimator was one of mine. Sure. That was, again, one of those Fangoria movies that I was just fascinated with. It was funny, and I like that. Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Were another set of movies that I really... that changed the way I viewed, because the first one was terrifying to me. It was actually really scary. Evil Dead 2 was more funny.
The porch swing is the scariest part of the whole thing.
Oh,
it's like the dun 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 or whatever.
The Thing.
Swinging in the wind.
John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yes.
When I was into special effects and that whole thing, I mean, the Thing was absolutely scary to me because, again, it was one of those suspenseful movies but also had great effects. Day of the Dead. I have to say, because in the 80s, Day of the Dead, you know, Bub.
It's a great cover.
Great, yeah.
Is that picture that. Now, yeah. Is Day of the Dead the one in the shopping mall, or is that Dawn?
That's Dawn. Dawn. Day of the Dead was the underground bunker.
Okay.
And they were, you know, kind of experimenting on the zombies. But the whole thing with them, you know, the classic scene of them pulling apart, and that was a Tom Savini deal. Oh, pulled him apart, and he's like, choke on it. You know, yes. It's ad-lib. That was totally ad-lib by the
so
actor.
That's so gross. It's
and they,
beautiful.
So they got to pull a guy apart and then start ripping out the guts. Awesome. And, you know, just Bub being kind of a a zombie hero for the first time ever. It made a big impression on me. And then Hellraiser. The original Hellraiser was just so...
Oh, that was so gross.
It was gory and terrifying at the same time. And
Kind of
like The Exorcist, I would say that that one shocked me because it was more of a, you know, these creatures, these Cenobites were torturous. And
well, it's still disturbing. Still disturbing, like when she... When she goes to the bar and picks up these guys and brings them back to her house, yeah, you're thinking, you know, what's going to happen? And then Frank comes out and she smashes him with a hammer.
Yeah.
And, oh, it's awful. It's awful. Yeah.
And then as I got older, I realized, you know, that house, it was all actually filmed in that house. That wasn't necessarily a set. It was a lot of it was filmed in this house. So it was very tight quarters. And so the behind the scenes on that is actually really cool. But just the whole thing of him crawling across the floor when he's kind of half becoming human again, and the skin. And
don't they start kissing, and he doesn't even have a face yet?
Yes. Yeah, and he doesn't have a face. Yeah. And it's all practical stuff, so it still stands up today as one of my most disturbing.
Jesus wept.
Again, ad-libbed. Was supposed to be something different, so, man. So. So, yeah, those are my five that changed me from being terrified of horror movies to actually really liking them. So,
read them again.
So, Reanimator, Evil Dead 2, The Thing, Day of the Dead, and Hellraiser.
Okay. For me, this is Zip. For me, Poltergeist was one.
Good one.
I have a few of these movies. The first three I'm going to list are ones that have... I have more of an affinity for supernatural, like, demonic possession type... And like true life haunting type movies over the slasher gore type movies. So Poltergeist was one that freaked me out because I had always, even as a kid, been interested in ghosts and ghost stories. And that one, like you mentioned earlier, starts out with little things happening. Yeah. And a lot of movies do that same thing, where little things happen. Things move, doors open, doors close.
That's what's really scary, because you can really imagine that happening in your own house.
Right. Yeah. So Poltergeist is one. Another one that freaked me out, and I'm not sure what year this came out, is The Entity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that one.
Where the woman is, like, attacked by...
An entity.
Mm. And I suppose, and the thing that always freaked me out was this, again, inspired by true events, supposed to be like a true story.
It was 82.
Okay. That one really freaked me out. But also was one that, like, plus it was kind of, there was, you know, some sexy scenes to it, too.
Yeah.
Where she's getting assaulted by an unseen force or
Barbara Hershey. I do remember
you can
that
see,
one,
you can see, like, imprints on her. Yeah, he's like the invisible hands feeling her up and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's wrong.
This is kind of an interesting... This other one, this movie that really always stuck with me, is Halloween 3.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow! That's Tim's fave.
Yeah, I know. That's his
Halloween 3 has nothing to do with any of the other Halloween movies.
Silver Shamrock! Mm-hmm.
But... Yeah, or Silver Shamrock. The whole, like, taking bits of stone. This is another supernatural thing. Bits of Stonehenge and installing them in a chip inside each one of those things. And there's a TV, and it's like they're going to kill everyone. This cult is going to kill everyone. You know, and the scene though, where they've got the little kid wearing the mask sitting in front of the TV, and the parents are not paying attention. And snakes pour out of the eye sockets of that mask.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
But just like, you know, all sort of pest falls out of this kid's helmet,
sorts of awesome.
Or helmet or mask. So those three in particular. But then, of course, the classic kind of slasher movies, Friday the 13th, which the first one came out in 1980. But all, like, you know, part two, part three. I saw part three in the theater in 3D. At the Orchard 4. Which is torn down. Yeah. It's torn down.
Big Buffalo.
And Nightmare on Elm Street. The first three of those, seeing those. When I was a kid, we had cable and had all the movie channels. And by all the movie channels, there was one of each movie channel, not like there is today, where there's like five or six of each. six HBOs.
I think there's eight HBOs.
But we had HBO, Showtime, Cinemax, the movie channel.
Mm-hmm.
and Playboy Channel.
I had HBO. Yeah. Yeah.
But that only came on at 7 p.m.
Right.
But anyway, like all summer long, any movie that came out, you could see like the end of it on HBO and flip over and watch the beginning of it on Showtime, mm-hmm. whether it was Fast Times at Ridgemont High or Nightmare on Elm Street or Back to the Future or...
You never leave the house. That sounds
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Exactly. Grease 2. Definitely saw a lot of Grease 2.
Beautiful. Plop me down. Yeah.
We're going to rock. We're going to roll. We're going to bop. We're going to bowl.
Let's go.
Well, I got my top five, and I'll go through them. And this isn't the, you know, like we said, it's not the top five I think are the best, but these are the ones that, you know, gave me my shaping of being a horror fan. Number five would be Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, yeah.
And what I liked about that, it was a cool, you know, zombie movie. But it kind of calmed my nerves because it's funny as hell. It's totally funny.
It was like one of the first funny horror films that had punk rock music and stuff in it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, that and, like, and it's so effective.
American Werewolf's another funny one too.
But Night Return of the Living Dead
and then zombie movies.
I went and bought it on Blu-ray so I can just enjoy it every year, and I watch it every October. I watch because the performances are great. Oh God, what are we gonna do now? Yeah. We've got a bunch of rabid weasels in bags or whatever the hell he says. Because it's,
you know, he's banging on the door. I just broke my hand. Why would you let me do that, Laura?
Yeah, of course at the very end, you know, the federal government takes care of everything and they just nuclear bomb the entire state.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I had that soundtrack on vinyl.
I have it on vinyl still, yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I have the Children of the Corn soundtrack.
45 Grave. 45 Grave.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So I love Return of the Living Dead. That's number... Because I love the gore and everything, and the acting is super funny. It's really well done. Number four, Nightmare on Elm Street, the original. Mm-hmm. Because it's still... I watch it every... I have this ritual every October. I try and watch a scary movie every night. Nightmare on Elm Street, the original. It's a classic. It's just Robert Englund scary as hell. The makeup is scary as hell. The practical effects, Johnny Depp sinking into the bed, the blood geyser. I mean, just Heather Langenkamp. I would put it just like right under Halloween. Like if Halloween's a perfect horror movie, I'd put Nightmare on Elm Street a little bit below it.
It did something different than the other horror movies weren't doing. It attacked you in your dreams and
you're defenseless.
It made you scared to go to sleep. It's like, what can we do to scare people? It's like, well, we're going to make them scared to actually go to sleep after watching this movie. Yeah. and it worked.
Right. Yeah. Number three would be Friday the 13th, Part 4, The Final Chapter. And that's the first horror movie I saw in the theaters as a kid, and I was 9. And it was one of those things where, you know, I had older parents, and I write about this in the blog. And so my sister and her husband... They're like, hey, let's take Brian out for a night. Do you mind? And my mom was like, no, take him out. We're gonna take him to a movie. Oh, that's great. We'll have a good time, kids. All right, we're going to the Maplewood Cinema over on North 90th Street in Omaha, and we're gonna see Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, because that's what we want to see. Do you want to see that, Brian?
Well, okay, yeah, I'm 9. That's great.
So it was my first radar film with all the TNA you're talking about and everything. Mm-hmm. So seeing that on the screen blew my mind. Of course, this was after I saw Friday the 13th Part 3 over about, you know, 17 nights over the summer, because I could only watch like 10 minutes of the time. Because my parents went to bed early. I'd go downstairs, turn on the TV, you know, and then Jason's pulling it out of his machete out of his shoulder, and I'm like, okay, I got to go to bed. Harold's getting it in the chest. That's good. Yeah, I'll take it up from here tonight.
Oh, gosh.
Number two would be Poltergeist. We've talked about that a bunch tonight, but just incredible movie. The special effects.
MILF.
There's the MILF, Doug, and there's also, you know, maggots. There's guys pulling their faces off. There's the dead bodies in the pool. There's the
tree.
Oh, the tree. The clown. The clown is scary as hell. Just all that stuff. And then the scene where they're watching the ghosts come down the staircase. I'm looking at a staircase here in the crypt. The ghosts come down, and then they watch it on the camera, and you can actually see the dead people. You know, like it's clear. Just all that stuff.
You see people, and you see with halos.
Yeah. And then for me, my favorite, I have to say it, my favorite 80s horror movie, Friday the 13th, 6, Jason Lives. It's my favorite.
Really? Wow.
And we're going to revisit this.
And I don't have to defend it. I don't have to defend it because it's my favorite.
Yeah.
You don't have
favorite to. Favorite doesn't
no,
mean best.
No judging.
No.
Here.
Favorite doesn't mean
it ain't the best, but it's my favorite.
All right.
Yeah, Douglas?
And a little tidbit, we're going to have, again, we're going to have a Friday 13th episode, which you will definitely want to listen to. Yeah.
Definitely.
Doug, what do you got on your list?
I don't have anything in order, like with a number. But I do have five different things that I wrote down when I first got here. Okay, so The Shining. Shining is the that I would see on at night, you know, and I would have to turn it off. You know, the blood starts coming out of the out of the elevator, and I had to turn it off. It just freaked me out.
Really?
I mean, I'm like 10 years old or whatever, you know. So that always got me. Children of the Corn.
Oh, yeah.
I love Children of the Corn. That was also cool because, you know, it was filmed up in Whiting, which is by Sioux City. So so we would hear about it and stuff like that. My dad drove us through the town, I think, at the same time. Cool. And so then I got to see a place, you know, in a movie for the first time, probably, you know, that I recognize. And so that's cool. I still go through there sometimes when I'm going up to Sioux City. I'll stop in there and it doesn't look. You can still see the square where Malachi.
Really?
Yeah, they have this weird flagpole thing there. You can see in the movie, and where Malachi's like, "Outlander, we have your woman. Maybe you don't hear so well." This is very. he sounds a lot better in the real movie. Nice. Huh? So he cuts her. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So Children of the Corn was awesome. Like I said, I went down to Homer's. My dad took me to Homer's, and I got the soundtrack on vinyl. And really? I still have that. And when I make haunted houses in my basement, I would play that, which would scare the shit out of kids. You know, most kids have like the scary sound effects, but I would be music, you know, that's scary.
He who walks behind the rose.
I was scaring all my workers. You know, the kids that wanted to be in it. They were freaked out. So that was really good for me. Anything that has spiders in it, still today, I have total arachnophobia. And so, like, Shatner and Kingdom of the Spiders, I would catch that.
Wow.
In fact, my neighbors, they had the book, and I would look at that, and it had black and white photos from the movie, in it, and I couldn't touch the book.
Tarantula?
Really?
Yeah, Tarantula, yeah.
Well, did you see the movie Tarantula?
Oh, no, I don't think I've seen that one.
Don't.
I started to watch Eight-Legged Freaks.
Yeah, once, Eight-Legged Freaks is great, but it's...
I didn't get finished or something like that. But, like, Arachnophobia freaks me out. Nope. Well, the particular one from the 80s, though, was... There's a scene in Something Wicked This Way Comes, which was on HBO a lot, and there's a scene where the lightning bolt comes, or some kind of, I think there's like a witch or something, and she turns into smoke, and it goes into the house, and anyway, all of a sudden the ceiling starts cracking, and tarantulas just start pouring into the room that these kids are in, and there's actually a scene where, like, they show the bed that this kid is in, and by where his feet are under the covers, it's moving and stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, and he pulls off the blanket and just spiders all inside there. And I remember one night in my bedroom where I slept like cross-leg, like Indian style, in the bed, leaning back like this so that my feet weren't at the end because I was like, I don't know what's down there. You know? So that scared me to death. And I still get freaked out with spider movies. So they say I got that one. Night of Living Dead is a classic for me. Just the original.
Oh, yeah.
Romero.
That was in the 80s, but...
Oh, I'm sorry.
1968.
Like, I watched this in the 80s. I have no idea. To me, this is the 80s, so you're right.
All right.
You guys look at me like...
I had the original Dracula, I wanted to put Omen and Omen 2 on my list, but those are from the 70s.
Well,
I watched them in the 80s when I was a kid.
Ghostbusters. How about that? Ghostbusters.
The library scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty
good. Get her.
That's your big plan, right, Ray? See, now I feel stupid. I'm just going to go home now. Now, the number one thing for me... is the Friday the 13th, pretty much like 1 and 2, they would play those things on like USA or some cable network, and it was edited, you know, to be okay to be on TV. But my aunt would let me come over and watch them with her in her basement and stuff. Oh, and I didn't get to watch them at my house or something, but she would be into it. And so I go over with my cool aunt and watch those, and I just really like that, you know. So I don't know, that's what I have. Sorry about the Night of Living Dead.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
But every Halloween, I swear, that thing was on TV, you know, somewhere, and I...
So, like, honorable mentions, I would say, that we haven't mentioned was From Beyond, House.
Mm.
The Fly.
Yeah.
Motel Hell.
The Fly.
They Live, The Blob. Monster Squad.
Oh, the Monster Squad. That's great.
Near Dark.
That got stolen when they broke in my
house. Those are some of the ones
Wolfman
that
has nards.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so sad, actually. It wasn't really scary, but it was sad. So.
Do you know who... this is... I think I got this
one. Those are the mainstream ones.
You know who auditioned to play the Dracula character in that, but didn't get it? Liam Neeson.
What?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I think that was...
Liam Neeson's?
Uh-huh. Of the giant cock fame.
Liam Neeson. Yeah. He's my jam.
Beautiful. Oh, that was good. I forgot about... there's such great movies, man. I forgot about The Fly.
Yeah, The Fly. I mean, I think everybody... And that transcended into the 90s. I think it was later 80s. But man, that whole where he's... I think everybody's had that nightmare of pulling out your teeth or pulling off your fingernails. Yes.
Well, that's like the first scene. We see that scene in two. Inflicted has a scene like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Marked Ones had the same scene when they're
Brundlefly.
The Brundlefly was the original.
To this day.
Yeah.
You know, what's happening?
Brundlefly.
Oh, and Poltergeist had it too, kind of.
Yeah, pulling off your skin.
I just can't stop fucking myself.
Anything you do in a mirror in a bathroom that just. Oh my God. Or you're cutting your nails and then you're just cutting your fingers off.
You guys have all had the dream where you pull your teeth out. Or your teeth have fallen out or
something.
I haven't had that one.
I may have. Man.
I usually
probably
will tonight.
My actual teeth falling out. So.
Oh yeah,
your face looks much better though.
Oh yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The Doug sore went away.
He's not hurting from laughing today, so that's good.
Yeah. He healed really fast.
I would.
I have a scar inside my mouth.
For honorable mention, would add The Lost Boys.
Oh yeah,
The Lost Boys. Very good.
Yeah.
Oh,
my gosh.
Maggots, Michael. Reading maggots.
Very good.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
And the thing was, it wasn't like scary. It wasn't scary. It was the movie that everybody's girlfriend loved.
Yeah.
They just love that. Oh, my God. I love The Lost Boys.
Really?
Oh,
that made you want to be a cool vampire.
That was the beginning of the hot vampires, I think. Yeah. It was like, yeah, like where everybody wanted to be a vampire. Or your girlfriends always wanted to date a hot vampire. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah, the girls always liked all the, they had their favorite.
My girlfriends
vampires.
All did date a hot vampire.
Yeah, see? Oh, my God.
In bed.
They really liked, the girls on my street really liked the one that was Bill. Mm-hmm. Or Ted, no, Bill.
Yeah, yeah, that was, yeah, it was in
Bill and Ted.
Bill and Ted.
Yeah, and I was just like, man, I'm never going to look like that guy.
Good call.
We watched we watched it recently, and my daughters watched it, and it was, they were just laughing at the whole saxophone.
Sax guy. Yeah, I know. Sax, he's so
big
bad.
Shirtless, muscled sax guy.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Again, 80s.
The 80s.
Sax music, man. Wow.
Good call. Good call on that one. To quote Karate Kid, hey, it's the 80s.
It's the 80s. You can drive.
Women can drive. Hey, it's the 80s.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed our 80s revisited here.
Hit us up on the web and let us know what we missed.
Right, exactly.
What was important to you.
Yeah, and your favorite 80s music.
Our stuff sucked.
Your favorite 80s horror films that, you know, weren't necessarily the top ones, but your ones that really
important to you.
Yeah, important to you, that you will always remember and always watch if it's on cable. So, all right. Well, this has been another exciting episode of Necronomicast. My name is Wayne.
Zip.
This is Brian.
Hey, it's Doug.
And we'll see you next time on the show.
Later.
You've been listening to the Necronomicast, a weekly podcast produced by Wayne Brecky, part of the Free Life Media Network.